to the old me, scared and unseen. You're the reason I built this dream. Now I speak so others thrive. Turn my scars into sound. I come alive from the ashes of the breakdown. I don't run, I rise, won't back down. This is keep it real, keep it purpose bound. Every word a step, every truth profound. We don't heal in silence, we fight with grace, softness and defiance, lighting up this place.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Keeping It Real on Purpose. And I am your host today, Edna J. White. I'm an author, entrepreneur, public speaker, podcast host. But most of all, I love putting people together that keep it real. And today on our show is going to be none other than Kelly Corr, who wrote this book, Letters to Singapore. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
Thank you very much, Edna. I'm excited to be here. I am in Calgary, Alberta, Canada, and I'm looking forward to connect with everyone.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. Now, tell us how you show up in the world.
Interesting. That's a loaded question, and I love it because it's one you never think about, or I never think about. And I think I show up at this point in my life, having all these experiences and lived pain and challenges behind me, I think I show up the way I want to show up, and I do show up is someone who is my authentic self. I'm finally at the place in my life where I am ready to share my stories. And that's why I wrote the novel by accident, and it beautifully happened to be my first novel after being in a state of fear for 20 years that I couldn't do it. And since then, I think I show up as someone who's interested in women's voices, women's issues, human rights issues, and stories, poems, and nonfiction that will make people say, I would love to know more, as much as I want to know more about them. So that's how I want to show up.
Okay. So tell us the story behind you being an author. I heard you say it was accidental. I need to hear this.
Yes. In 2019, I was accepted into a writing program for immigrant women in Canada. And I was one of the five selected, and it was a three-month program. And I really only had two poems published 20 years ago. So when I was accepted, I freaked out quite a bit. I was in a state of now I had to show up. And I had a wonderful mentor. And she said to me, I would like 10 pages every 2 weeks. And now I was in a real panic because there were no more excuses. Yeah. And I really didn't know what to do. I'm a university lecturer. I teach writing. I teach other people's stories, literature, poems. And I always thought, well, how hard can this be? Well, it was very hard. And I came up with this concept. I brainstormed with my daughter and I went, what am I going to do? And I said, how about Letters to Singapore? And she said, I second that emotion. So I kept this title to everyone who asked me. And when my mentor said, well, I want the 10 pages, I said, I don't know where to start. She said, write the first letter. And that's how this book unfolded. It's about a young protagonist from Singapore who goes to the University of Calgary as a foreign student and writes letters home to mommy's sister, her Chinese friend, and her South Indian friend. And slowly, painfully, joyfully, the book unfolded.
Yeah, that's usually right. Slowly, painfully. Now, doesn't writing this book bring up like old feelings?
Absolutely. You see, because I was a new writer, I didn't know exactly what to do. So I borrowed from my experiences as a student in Calgary in that time frame. So I didn't have to do too much research because I knew the places, I knew the restaurants, I knew the skiing hill, and it became seamless for me to plagiarize parts of my life and put it in the novel.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense. So I heard you say your daughter was in it with you. Is that right?
She's my mentor as well.
She mentored you through it. That's good. You always need a cheerleader. Need a cheerleader.
Yes.
So I marked off three areas I'd love for you to share with the audience. Three letters that you would love to summarize for the audience and give them a quick glimpse into what this book is really about. This one is, I'm looking at September 20th, 1986. Can you give them a little synopsis of what that chapter is all about?
What page is it?
It is page 141.
141. Okay, let me just see. Okay. So the young protagonist is in Calgary to do her university degree. And in this letter, she goes back home to Singapore to visit, like most foreign students do. And anyone who knows Singapore or about Singapore know that we only talk about food. We talk about food all the time. So there's some parts where it talks about, and I use food as a symbol too for starved and starving. As someone outsider and an immigrant, we all know that food becomes that important symbolism to fill in the blanks of what we miss. It's something that we can very quickly reconnect with.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in this letter, I talk about the protagonist, Simran, who is 20. When she writes letters home, she talks about her experiences at university. And of course, as you know, all young people like to do, we like to talk about our professors.
Yeah.
It's ironic because I'm a lecturer now and I wonder what they say about me. The professor in this one, Professor Heathcliff, is a very intriguing character. When you come from Singapore, there's a very strong relationship of respect and distance between a student and their teacher or professor. So in Canada, when a foreign student comes there, it becomes very blurred. The lines are blurred and the foreign student or the outsider does not know clearly how to negotiate this dance of a different relationship. But the professor is, you know, more approachable, more interesting. And in this letter, I talk about how Heathcliff, Professor Heathcliff, is in love with one of the students, and he would come here in the window and look at this beautiful student with her long hair and come to class with his dogs and just behave in a very unprofessor-like way, which is intriguing for the young protagonist, because that's not how teachers are back home, right? You have this behave yourself. And I think the reminiscing when she goes back after a year, so much changes for the protagonist, because when you come from the East and you go to the West, it is like learning the steps of life all over again. Right. Especially this protagonist who came from a very strict East Indian background, where she had to be, had to have an arranged marriage arranged for her. She had decisions made for her. And then it's that metaphorical, symbolic freedom of going to the West, and you're just like a crazy bird.
Yeah.
Ready to fly, except you don't know where to fly sometimes.
You don't, we don't. Yeah, that's, this is intriguing. Very intriguing. The whole book is. I like the you know, what you're saying about the way you, the way you're saying it is almost as clear as your writing is. I like that. So thank you. The second piece is January 1987. And that's on 196. I think I chimed with this letter a lot.
96. Mm-hmm. And this one, she writes to her friend, Anita. So Anita is a South Indian friend.
Okay.
And it's very interesting because in Singapore, there are many races and people of different backgrounds.
Oh,
so
people okay.
are Indian, so I'm Sikh or Punjabi. And then the South Indians, then we have Chinese, and we have Malays, and then we have Eurasians, and now we have many expatriates. So it's just a beautiful melting pot.
Okay.
And this character, Anita, she has way more freedom than Simran, the East Indian protagonist. So she has had her secret. So what I like about the letters is I used to always wonder what people wrote in their letters. You know, I wanted to read them. And of course, forbidden, it's not legal. And I may have taken my sister's letter and used the kettle and steamed it open and read it and got it back, but I will deny it if you ask me again. So, the thing in this letters, it shows that even when we know people, we don't. So over the letters and the pages, Anita's life unfolds and the secrets come up that are even terribly shocking to her friend Simran. So in this letter, she has found a new boyfriend. She has left her husband, who has been terrible to her, unknown to everyone. And she has gone to England and found a younger British lover, man, boyfriend, who comes back. And then I couldn't resist the hint, the drama of her new boyfriend meeting her ex-husband, and the punching match and the fit and the man and the triangle of them trying to reclaim this woman who's trying to assert her right to be who she wants, to love who she wants, to leave unhappy situations. And under that, under the layers of that, is the fact that many women, especially Asian women, do not leave their husbands, whether they're good or bad or wonderful or terrible. So this character for me became that possibility that a woman in 1985 to 1988 could have lived her own life, made her own choices, some of them really bad, but so what, right?
Right.
Are the opportunities that men have. So that's the part, I think, that Anita goes through new experiences and moves out of just being with a man from Singapore. So it crosses many lines of age and race and expectations and thou shall not as a woman and a wife.
Wow, that's really good. That's good. So my next favorite is 6 June 1987, where Anita is now writing a letter, I believe.
Okay, and
262.
Okay. So then I think like life is messy. Love is messy. And being free is messy. And that's what all the characters in the letters find out, including Simran, who is in Calgary on her own. And then these women back home. So with Anita, who has dumped her husband, rightfully so, found a new lover, Phil, rushed into it, and very excited to initially, you know, the first 90-day excitement is always there. And then realized that was another mistake. And I think when I look at that and I look at Anita's character, I think I want to say that's okay as well, right? Because some people are lucky. The first man they meet and marry is happily ever after. Some need two. Some need 10. And usually the woman, again, is considered unacceptable, especially in an Asian society when she does that. So I wanted to showcase the difficulty of courage and choices, right? So once again, Anita could stay there, with Phil because, you know, she made a decision and he was in love with her. But when she writes the letter home, she is realizing that you're right. I rushed into this one. Maybe it's the fear I can't survive on my own. Maybe I love being with a man. Maybe I love the idea of love. I must admit, it is liberating to make my own mistakes as painful as they are.
Excellent. This book audience is very intriguing. Each chapter you get a lesson out of. So Kelly goes through all of the experiences on a fiction basis, but has a hint of nonfiction, which is great. I love it. I think it's great. I think those were the three favorites, you know, my three favorites, and how you gave it energy. You know, that's really what it is. And this book is some energy. Well, I don't say book, it's a novel of well-written letters. It's a novel of well-written letters. Yeah, it was very exciting. Can you tell my audience or encourage them as an author, you know, if they're starting out or thinking about it, what they could do? Can you share your story around, you know, your challenges and your victories?
Absolutely. I think for me, the biggest was the fear of rejection. And I did get many rejections. I wrote stories, poems, nonfiction. And in 20 years, there were so many thank you, but that I gave up. I gave up. Rejection is painful. And of course, life came into play. But then I think when I found that my story had to be heard, even by myself, if I could just share that story and say it out loud, then it becomes possible for other people to share our lives together. And with that courage and determination, I started writing. And during COVID, I call it my bountiful years, because I had over 50 stories, poems, nonfiction pieces accepted around the world and published. And it just blew my mind, because every time one thing got published, I thought, I can do this. So I just kept trying and trying. And I think success obviously promotes success, but I was so focused on the negative aspect that I didn't realize that, you know, it's a balance. You win some, you lose some.
And you have to get through some no's before you can get a yes, right?
Absolutely. And I think that when you write, if you are passionate about it, you know, when I see people sing or dance or paint, I can feel that joy. And if writing gives you that pleasure and you write, and it doesn't matter if you get published or not, because when you write, you become the authentic voice and self that is inside of you trying to come out.
Right. That's good. That's good stuff. Yeah. So how can my audience reach out to you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. And you can also send me an email. I'm at kellycore07@gmail.com. And I would love to hear from you, hear your stories, your joys, your challenges, and answer any questions you may have.
That's wonderful. Well, that brings us to the end of the show, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you, my beautiful guest, Kelly Core, for being here and showing up and sharing this timely story in her novel. Thanks for listening again. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post it about on social media, or leave a rating and review. And remember, on my Spotify, you can actually ask a question to the guest. Just press the button, leave your question 30 seconds or less, and I will make sure that our guest, Kelly, gets your question. To catch up to me, you can find me all over the place, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, at EJW Coaching. And we thank you again, because you could be anywhere else, but you're here today listening to us. This is Edna White and my guest, Kelly Core, saying goodbye for now.
Thank you.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.